There's never been a black cop in this city. We think you might be the man to open things up around here.
It's 1979, and Colorado Springs, Colorado, the state's second largest city. Police intelligence officer Ron Stallworth sees an ad in the local paper for the Ku Klux Klan, which was seeking to start a chapter in Colorado. At one point in his investigation, he called David Duke, the Klan's national director, otherwise known as Grand Wizard.
Hello, this is Ron Stallworth calling.
Well, who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke.
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
God. Last time I checked, what can I do you for?
Well,
since you asked, I hate blacks. I hate Jews,
Mexicans and Irish, Italians and Chinese.
But my mouth to God's ears, I really hate those black rats. And anyone else, really, that doesn't have pure white Aryan blood running through their veins.
I'm happy to be talking to a true white American.
God bless white America.
Hi, I'm Nicole Shaw, your host for The Source, Quill and Scrolls podcast that highlights the principles of our organization. Today's topic is initiative, and I sat down last week with Ron Stallworth to talk about his experience in infiltrating the Colorado chapter of the KKK in 1979. To go undercover at that time as an African-American police officer was highly risky, and he had to obtain essential information from dangerous white supremacists. That took immense initiative. I asked Ron how he felt when he went undercover, and this is what he had to say.
You have to be and you have to become whoever your target is. So in my case, dealing with the Klan, I use the language of hate that they use and communicate in. They accepted me as a white supremacist over the phone because I talked like them. Okay, and I made them believe just simply by talking that I was one of them, with sight unseen. So you have to communicate in the language they communicate in, and you have to be effective at it. You can't be squeamish. I've talked to some people who said, well, we couldn't have done that because we couldn't have said the N-word, or we couldn't have said things about Jews that they were saying. Then you're in the wrong business. If you're going to work undercover, you have to become like the target you're going after, including adopting a persona that you may despise, may make you sick to your stomach, but you have to be that in that moment in order to convince them that you are who you are pretending to be. And you have to maintain that at all times. You can't bounce in and out of it. The only time I let my guard down was when the phone hung up, and I was when I stopped laughing, because we were cracking up all the time over the fact we were making fools of these people, but getting valuable information, which was the core of our investigation. But I laughed an awful lot. While I was on the phone, I was deadly serious. Sometimes I was cracking up laughing while being deadly serious, because you couldn't help but laugh. This whole story is hilarious. And I knew it as I was living it. So undercover work is something you shouldn't go into lightly. You need to be prepared for it. You need to study your target, gain as much information about your target as you possibly can, know them inside out. And whatever identity you create for yourself for an undercover assignment, you have to know that identity inside and out. One core thing that I was taught and that I lived by during those days was don't stray too far from who you actually are. So I may have had two different undercover names, even though I didn't use it on that investigation, but my date of birth always remained the same if I had to tell somebody how old I was. If nobody asked me, but if I had to have given them a Social Security number, it would have been my real Social Security number. You know, in other words, you maintain as close to your natural persona as you possibly can without having to create something, because those are the things that naturally are ingrained in your mind that you can just conjure up real quick. But everything else that you conjure up, you have to know it inside out so that when you have to, you can throw it all out at them.
Yeah, thank you for that advice. I think it really shed some light, especially on the fact that you should stay true to who you are. That wasn't something that I would have expected, and so that was really interesting for me to learn, and I appreciate that.
There's a myth out there that When I talked to David Duke, I was pretending to be white. I was using a white voice. Reporters threw that out there, and it kind of stuck as a narrative. It's a lie. I never told any reporter I talked in a white voice. What I told them was I talked to David Duke pretending to be white. And the way I pretended was through language. I talked to David Duke on the phone exactly as I'm talking to you, and your listeners are hearing my voice right now. This is who I am. I didn't pretend to be something that I wasn't. Okay? And unless you are a good mimic, you don't pretend to be something that you aren't when you start playing with voice and things like that. So be who you are. And then polish up, embellish the rest.
Learning to stay true to who you are and personality speaks volumes to debunking the myth that you have to be a good actor when going undercover. Rather, being able to improvise quickly and stay quick on your toes is the true key to being a great investigative reporter. After speaking about his undercover experience, I asked Ron about how that experience in the 1970s informs us about our current racial divide.
As I said, Donald Trump followed David Duke's playbook all the way to the White House. He conned 63 million Americans in the process, and I'll give him this. He pulled off one of the greatest cons in American history. We have a con man in Washington right now who's shut the government down. That's all he is a con man. And I say that because the tactics he uses, the way he expresses himself, that's the way undercover cops talk, you know? Somebody catches you in a lie, you start talking real fast. You change the subject, or you get them to redirect their thinking. Because you're talking so fast. He does it all the time. I used to do it myself. Okay? You play those games with people, and that's all he's doing, is running a big con on this country because 63 million people put him there. But he followed David Duke's playbook to reach the White House. The one thing he didn't do was control his language, you know? He was very explicit in how he felt about stuff and whatnot. It would have eliminated anybody else. America bought it, okay? But the Donald Trumps of the world, the Steve Kings of the world, they're a dying breed, even though it may not seem like it right now. This country is not, when I see somebody wearing a Make America Great hat, to me that hat says Make America White Again. Okay, we aren't going back to those times when we as black people had to be subservient to white people. Okay, America in about 20, 30 years is going to be a minority-dominant country, minority-majority country. So we would no longer have to live in fear of the white majority, like Donald Trump and Steve King and people like them. You know, they will have to learn to diversify their thinking and coexist with us. But you have to understand, the thinking of white supremacists is all the same. Whether you're a skinhead, a neo-Nazi, a KKK member, alt-right member, they all think the same. They think blacks are inferior to whites. They think any other minority is inferior to whites. They think Jews are the biggest threat to America because in their belief, Jews run the government. They run the media industry, the entertainment industry, and the financial industry. And so it's arguable as to who they hate more, blacks or Jews. They think we as black people have the mentality of an ape or chimpanzee. And therefore, we need our Jewish handlers to control us and lead us by the hand, okay? They hate my Latina wife, my beautiful Latina wife. They hate her because she's Mexican, okay? She doesn't belong here. She belongs across the Rio Grande border from where we live in El Paso on the other side, even though she's an American citizen, okay? That is the danger of white supremacist thinking. Unless you are like them. And they like to say that they're pure white. First of all, let's destroy that myth. There is no such thing as pure white. White Aryan. What the hell does that mean? But this is what they believe. It does not exist. And unless you think like them, then you aren't one of them.
It's clear that the racial divide is only intensifying in Trump's America, according to Ron. And we see this with endless news coverage of incidents revolving around racial differences. One of these instances occurred in Washington, D.C. at the Lincoln Memorial Park. A viral video was released depicting a standoff between Native American veteran Nathan Phillips and all-boys private high schooler Nick Sandman. They were the focus on cultural differences and people's reactions to them in the United States, and it exploded in the news again. The initial video showcased Sandman in what appeared to be a display of white supremacy, refusing to move and smirking in the face of Phillips, who was playing a traditional Native song on his drum. A longer video was later released showing Phillips and his fellow peers appearing to mock traditional dances of Native Americans, spurring Phillips to walk over to Sandman. A day later, the last, longest video was published with a length of 2 hours. This video shows the true story as it unfolded, showcasing another group at the center of the debacle, antagonizing and explicitly harassing both the students and the Native Americans who were at the park. This incident showcases how racial divides are intensifying even now, and it relates to what happened in the 1970s when the Klan was so popular in the news. As journalists, we must be inclusive to our audience in each of their demographic backgrounds while also maintaining a loyalty to accuracy above all else. The goal of reporting is to ensure that we get fair, accurate, and valuable information to the public in order to keep them informed and aware of what is happening in their community. Going undercover is something that sometimes must be done in order to relay information of profound importance to the public, if it is not possible to obtain it any other way. Remember that undercover work goes against one of journalism's core ethical principles, and that is to remain transparent to not only your audience, but to your sources as well. Poynter Institute ethicist Bob Steele created a checklist for journalists who want to go undercover, and I think this might be of use to you guys. He included several conditions that journalists need to be true to before they decide to go undercover. Other than the ones that I mentioned earlier, they require journalists are willing to disclose the nature of their deception and reason for it to their audience. It requires that involved individuals in the news organization fully pursue the story or ensure excellence and accuracy. It requires the harm prevented by information revealed through deception and going undercover outweighs any other harm caused, and journalists involved must fully consider the ethical and legal issues of going undercover. These criteria, and these criteria only, justify the deception of investigative work in going undercover. Winning a prize, beating the competition, conducting an illegitimate investigation, and focusing on unethical story subjects do not justify that sort of deception. Remember to keep Ron's advice in mind and stay true to yourself. In a world where we as journalists are targeted for being connoisseurs of fake news, we must hold steadfast to our core principles of fairness and accuracy. That's all the time we have for this episode of The Source. I would like to thank retired police officer and author Ron Stallworth for being our guest and for providing so much valuable information to our audience. Until next time, this is Nicole Shaw, signing off from Quill and Scroll.